I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. One of the better books you could get your hands on this fall is the wonderful new book from Roy McGregor. He's written a beautiful book on the canoe. It's called Canoe Country, The Making of Canada. It's about how the canoe has shaped Canada throughout the country's history. It has the reminiscences of canoeists throughout the country's history, as well as legends such as those surrounding voyage and exploration from the time of the fur trade, even before and up to very recently. Mr. McGregor joins me now, and I'll get him to tell us about this fine book, about some of the stories herein, and his own lifelong adventures through Algonquin Park in Ontario and throughout the country. Roy McGregor is a distinguished author of many best-selling books, including Northern Light, The Enduring Mystery of Tom Thompson and the Woman Who Loved Him, and Canadians, A Portrait of a Country and Its People, which he was both on with. He is a columnist at the Globe and Mail. His work throughout a marvelous career has earned him many awards and citations. This is his 50th book, and it's published by Random House. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program in Ottawa today, Roy McGregor. Mr. McGregor, good morning.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Good.
Do you spend much time in a canoe this summer?
Not as much as I would have liked. We have five grandchildren, all very young, and they were around a lot of the time. Two of them come over from France, so we were busy, busy, busy grandparents. And yes, we got in a canoe, but it was for a little short paddling lessons, and fun enough, but no... I like to take a week at least into the bush, and I was unable to do that.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you remember the first time that you ever encountered a canoe?
No, not really, because more or less born into them. My mother was born in Algonquin Park. Her father was the ranger, their chief ranger, and she was born very deep in the woods in a tent, actually, and in 1915, and until she was 17, she never left the park, and the only mode of travel that she and her siblings had was canoes. They had about five canoes, and it was like a fleet of canoes for the family. And so she taught me how to paddle when I was very, very young, and took me out and was very careful about what you do and don't do. And one of the things she always said was, you don't really have to talk much. She just wanted me to be quiet, and she wanted to enjoy her paddle.
Yeah. So it has been a part of your life for
very
as long.
Much.
Yeah. And so your kids, now your grandkids, showing them that, getting them to experience that, I mean, I guess that was a given, wasn't it?
I think so, because our four kids growing up now all have paddled a lot, and one of them in particular became a nature guide out in the Rockies, and she's done a lot of the marvelous rivers out in British Columbia and Alberta.
And is it something that you find throughout the country, every province, you're able to do this?
I think so. I mean, it's used quite differently. You know, if you were to go down to the Maritimes, and certainly in New Brunswick, parts of Nova Scotia, they tend to be quietly used for fly fishing. You're kind of sneaking up on the pools and fly fishing out of the canoe. They're very, very perfect for that because you're not likely to get too tangled. In northern Quebec, you're running some pretty tough rivers, whitewater, and that's great fun. Same in Ontario, but Ontario has a lot of flat water too. Just going out for family excursions throughout the prairies, you couldn't do better than some of those rivers. The North Saskatchewan, I was just out having a look at the Bow River because I'm doing a series on them, and then British Columbia, it absolutely goes without saying that you've got sea canoeing, you've got every kind of river you could imagine, and some spectacular lakes as well.
And you can do that, say, just outside of Vancouver?
You can do it really anywhere. I mean, yeah. People do go see kayaking, and I'm in love with the canoe, and I make no bones about that, but I'm not somebody that looks down my nose at kayaking. Quite the contrary. I think kayaking is fabulous.
You're talking to someone who's never been in a canoe, so if you could sort of describe what it's like and what it feels like. I mean, do you find, having spent as much time as you have, that you understand the country a little bit better because of your time in a canoe?
Well, I believe that. I mean, it may not be necessary. That may be a vanity thing, but I certainly think that because I've been able to see things. And you had mentioned earlier that I'd done a book on Tom Thompson, so I've always been interested in the painters, the Group of Seven and Tom. And really, they painted from the canoes, so I've been in to see a lot of the places that they have painted. I think also that when you are in a canoe, it's one guy told me once, he said, if you're in fast water in a canoe and you look down, if you have time to look down, you can almost see the canoe breathing as the ribs go slightly in and out, bending and that. And they're very responsive. And You're not leaving any trail whatsoever. You're not polluting anything. You're not using any kind of fuel except yourself. You leave no environmental mark, really, and you feel good about that. So it's all the kinds of things that I think Canadians like to think is good about Canada, and it traces right back to the past in a wonderful way.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you still have to carry it down to the water.
Yes, and you can carry it. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, I can't carry the tin boat that I have, but I can carry my canoe.
Yeah. Canoes have obviously changed over the years in terms of how they're made and what they're made of. Is there a recipe in terms of what makes a good canoe?
Canoe enthusiasts would probably vote for the cedar strip or the cedar canvas covered canoe because they're so responsive and they feel so good. But people who are doing whitewater wouldn't want to take those canoes down the whitewater for fear of gouging them in the rocks or wrapping them. So they tend to use big clunkers that are made of ABS or fiberglass. At one time, the canoes were made of aluminum and were quite popular for that. And now, especially for older people, there are Kevlar canoes that are extraordinarily light. I have one in the garage right now that weighs only 42 pounds.
Really?
So it's very light, very responsive, but I have to admit, very tippy, too. So you really want to have a pack in there to weight it down to get some kind of core weight in the middle.
For me, it's
still the canvas and the cedar.
When did you realize that it was so linked to our identity as a country?
it came by accident because in 2007 I was asked by the CBC to sit as one of three judges on this contest they were having called the Seven Wonders of Canada. And so the votes came in. Millions of people voted. It was absolutely a sensation. Began on radio, ended up on the National. Peter Mansbridge kind of cherry and everything. Went on for several nights. And we winnowed down a master list of about 50 down to the seven and had arguments. And I kept thinking, I need to be able to have something that I can defend that has no real geographical location, something that pertains to all parts of Canada, whether it's the north, the east, the west, whatever. And I started to think that the canoe served that purpose, and the canoe had a link to the past. You know, I've even argued no canoe, no Canada, because the Aboriginals, for the natives of this country, could not have gotten around the country or around their territory without canoes. They couldn't have hunted without them. They couldn't have been able to move from site to site. Then you have the European explorers arriving and realizing that their rowboats were no good, so they switched over to the canoe. That's how our country got explored. And then you have the settlers following that. You have the fur trade. No canoes, no fur trade, I think, it's fair to say. So how could you be more linked to the past than you when you're in a canoe?
And so you found that Canadians shared your enthusiasm for it during this contest, right?
Well, it really was the first one they named as the Seven Wonders of Canada. And there were some people that weren't at all amused. I mean, I remember the people of Thunder Bay had voted for their marvelous sleeping giant that you can see from the harbor there. They had about 170,000 votes. And the judges, the three judges, and we're all guilty of this, by the end of the list, we didn't have a sleeping giant on it. So they were not pleased, and I understand that perfectly. So they were given the People's Choice Award.
Have you traveled to Thunder Bay in recent years?
I went there months after this happened. I had actually had I don't want to make too much of it. Technically, you could call it a death threat, but it's just basically somebody saying they were going to get me for it. And so I had to go up there for another reason. Then I landed, and there was a reporter there and a television camera, and they grilled me for a few minutes, and I tried to explain what I'd done and that I loved Thunder Bay, and I'd been to the Sleeping Giant and camped near there, and by the time I left, one of the counselors had presented me with a beautiful painting of the Sleeping Giant, which we now have on our wall. So it looks like bygones are bygones.
Indeed. You talk in the book of a number of politicians who have canoed, Pierre Trudeau, I guess, the most prominent of them. What do you think that they get out of canoeing that others don't, perhaps?
Well, Trudeau was an ascetic. He was a single man when he was a student. He was single till well on into his life. He was kind of a hermit, almost a monk, and he liked the solitude. And he had written an essay when he was a very young man talking about how you can do all sorts of different things. You can walk, you can hike, you can go by automobile, and the only thing that really changes you is the canoe trip. And he had been sent when he was about 16 off to Algonquin Park to attend a camp where he was to work on his English, improve his English. He was perfectly fluent, you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And he began canoe tripping there, and he carried it on throughout his life. He went on his last canoe trip when he was quite an old man, and actually he flipped the canoe in whitewater, but survived thanks to a good, strong friend who was with him. But he did canoe all his life, and he passed it on to his children for sure.
And did you find that I mean, you also talk about Jack Layton in the book. I mean, he and Olivia Chow love to canoe, others as well. I mean, but by the way, you spent some time with Stephen Harper a couple years ago when he was writing his book. Do you think he's ever canoed?
There is one up at Harrington Lake. I've been up to Harrington Lake when I was working on the hockey book with him, and there are canoes up there, so I have to presume he's taken them out. He's not really an outdoors type of person, but his wife, Lorraine, certainly, she hikes, and I'm sure canoes. I can't say that I saw them in a canoe, but I have to feel that they were using them.
Yeah, because it just seems like the people who have, canoed, I should say, understand a little bit better this country. And I mean, you know, as you said, it's not, you don't need to canoe to understand the country, but it does add something to one's understanding of it.
Well, I think it's a reflective act. You know, it doesn't, yeah. You don't move very quickly. You're trying to concentrate very minimally on what you're doing. Paddling becomes something you do by rote, and therefore your mind is free to wander. And given its freedom to wander, your eyes will pick up the various parts of the wilderness that you enter, or semi-wilderness, and I don't think it's possible for people not to think about the country when they're out in a canoe and appreciate what it is that Canada gives you. It is, I mean, when you think about it, how many countries in the world have lakes where you can drink the water right out of the lake? How many countries have places where the fish is clean and where the forests are so pristine? It's just a gift we know we have, but sometimes we have to slap our own faces and realize that that's out there, and we're lucky to have it. The canoe gets you there.
Yeah. What about the costs of doing it, say? I mean, that's something that you discuss in the book, that it has become prohibitive for a lot of people.
Well, the type of canoe trip that you tend to read about and hear about, the adventurous one, the up north one, the 56-day canoe trip up the Coppermine or whatever, yes, they're very expensive. They tend to be the purview of better-off families, especially those who are able to send their children off to these canoeing camps. That's not being derogatory about the camps in the slightest way. It just is a fact of life. It's expensive to do that. The beauty of the canoe is that you can do it right close at hand for very cheap. You don't have to go off into the north. It's nice that you can. And that's why at the end of the book I argue, and I'm certainly not the first to argue this, it goes way back to Bruce Hutcheson, from out Victoria ways, and Bruce used to write often about how it should be mandatory in Canada that every child that goes to school have a 2-week canoe trip at some point in the curriculum. It'll teach them a lot of stuff. One thing I know it will teach you is to stop whining and don't complain and work as a team and enjoy yourself even if it's pouring rain and cold. And a canoe trip, for whatever reasons, is absolutely all of those things that really has a sense of accomplishment that I can't think is replaced in any other way. It would be great for our kids. Should be part of the curriculum.
Now, so you do think that the benefits of canoeing is lost on, say, younger generations as well as immigrants?
Yes, that's a very strong issue now. It's not lost on the younger generation that are able to do it and are doing it, but not enough are doing it. There's a million canoes in the country, and that's a lot. But there's also a flood of immigrants that have come into this country in the last 30, 40 years. Just now, from what I gather from Parks Canada and other people who work in those trades, they're starting to see a lot more new Canadians, second-generation Canadians camping. They're not risking the canoe trip so much yet, but they are out there camping, and often with a canoe. So they're camping out of their car and maybe using the canoe on whatever lake or river they happen to be camping on. The next step is pretty logical. You go for a little canoe trip. And I really do hope that over time, more and more people who clearly love this country. I mean, one of the things you soon learn in traveling around the wilderness and the parks of our country is that the people who are out there staring in wonder are often new Canadians or visitors. So they can get closer to that wilderness they love by going in a canoe or a kayak.
You talk in the book of Blair Fraser, and if you've read you know, you can read, I think he wrote one book, is that right?
No, they put together a book of a collection of his articles from McLean's.
He was
McLean's Ottawa editor right up until 1968 when he went off on a canoe trip and made a mistake on a rapids on the Petawawa River and paid for it with his life. Very sad story.
Yeah, and so you tell the story in the book about, I guess after he died, a cairn was placed in remembrance of him. And a few years ago now, the thing disappeared. And his son, Graham, who is the Official Languages Commissioner, he and his sons, and I believe one of his grandchildren, go up to try to put that back together again, and they encountered an adventure of their own.
Yeah, a friend of mine and myself had been in to look for the cross. It was a cross that someone had ripped out of the ground and thrown away, kind of an eco-bandit, and he had written these bragging letters off to the various parks officials saying that he had this was a curse on the landscape and get rid of this stuff. It turns out that this wonderful wilderness lover had just simply ripped the cross off and thrown it in the river, at which point it could have torn people's feet that were trying to get through or even stabbed into a canoe, who knows. Whatever, we found it in low water. We didn't find it. People had found it before us. We went out, informed Graham Fraser and his family and said, if you would like to go in to repair it, we'll be happy to take you. And we took them. So I wrote the whole story about that adventure, how they were so afraid of the water that had taken their father, grandfather, great-grandfather, how they learned to do some white watering. And then in a wonderful irony, a happy irony it turned out, Graham Fraser himself flipped his canoe in the last rapids that we were on, survived it fine. But there was a moment there when his feet were caught underneath the seat. He thought, oh my God, how can this possibly be happening? The same thing, same river. Got out of it okay, but I think that they really found that a moving and emotional experience.
And you learn something about oneself in moments of crisis like that, and I'm sure the Frasers did.
Yes, they did, and Graham is not now afraid of rivers as he had been. He's not afraid to go whitewater paddling, and apparently his sons were quite keen on it, and his grandson learned how to paddle, and he learned how to fly fish, and was just a great kid. He's only a young, young man, so that was wonderful to see.
You also tell the story in the book about the loonie, the $1 coin. I guess we used to have silver dollars back in the day before 1987, and a canoe was on it, wasn't it?
For the most part, yeah. If you go back to the old silver dollars that often you'd be given as a graduation present,
right,
or whatever, you'd look on the back, it'd be a canoe, birch bark canoe with a voyageur at one end and a First Nations person in the front. And that was to be the design of the new $1 coin that would be permanent and it would replace the $1 bills. But they sent the die that they had chosen, the one with the canoe on it, out to Winnipeg. They didn't pay the proper courier price to have it specifically delivered to the mint. Instead, it was thrown in with a bunch of deliveries, got lost somehow. They had to send out the backup, when the backup turned out to be the loon. So, but for a mistake with a courier, we would have canoes on the back of our $1 coin instead of the loon, and we have to call it, I guess, the canoonie.
Are you like Bill Mason and thinking that rather than the maple leaf on the flag, we should have a canoe?
Not really, because I love the Canadian flag as it is. I mean, we've grown up with it. We've learned to embrace it. Anytime there's an Olympic victory, it's there. Anytime we're feeling particularly proud of our country, it's flying high and we're singing to it. So it's our flag and we love it. But Bill Mason's point was, when he got into this great argument with his friend Pierre Trudeau on a camping trip once, on a canoe trip, Bill argued that the maple leaf isn't even found in most of Canada, certainly not in the north and hardly at all in the west. And so he said, to have something that pertains to all parts of the country and all people in the country, it should have been the canoe. And I think it's a very interesting and somewhat valid argument. I don't want to see any kind of a change. I don't want to have a debate about it, but it's a kind of a fun discussion.
What did Trudeau think?
Trudeau, of course, had just recently come to government, and he was part of the Liberal government. They had just brought in the new flag in 1965. Pearson, and of course Trudeau was loyal to Pearson and loyal to Pearson's flag, and he argued the other way. The other way, of course, the people who were along in that trek just sat there with their jaws slack, wondering, well, where's this argument going to go, because Bill got quite animated about it all.
And so you've gained a lot of insight and wisdom over the years about this country, especially in the canoe. After writing this book, what do you know now that you didn't know heretofore?
I think that each time I do one of these books, I find out how much our Canadians love their country and aren't very good at demonstrating it. It takes almost a time of crisis or something like the Olympics before we start showing it. And more often than not, we just kind of have this, I don't know what it is, a Calvinistic attitude where we do a lot of grumbling and griping. And we're seeing a lot of it during this election, of course, like everything, rah, rah, rah. Mm-hmm. But in fact, you take the people who are whining and complaining aside and you take them out to where they love to be, by and large it's going to be in the great outdoors, and by and large it's going to be near the wilderness, and more often than not it's going to be in some kind of a vessel that allows them to get out on the water, whether it's a boat or a canoe or a kayak. So that you have to tap into this, and every time I write a book about something like this, I find that in talking to the people who read it or want to talk about it, that yeah, that's the way they feel too. They just absolutely love Canada.
And it's made me, as I told you before we started, it's made me want to get into a canoe.
Yes, let's do it.
Yeah. What was the line from Pierre Burton about having sex in a canoe?
Well, he denied saying it, but I'm sure he did say it. It's a pretty good line. He said, a Canadian is someone who knows how to make love in a canoe. And my friend Phil Chester, with whom I paddle a lot and was on the Fraser trip to replace the Cairn, Phil said, Pierre kind of got it wrong. He said, a real Canadian knows enough to take out the center thwart before making love in a canoe.
And Cosmopolitan, as you write in the book, I guess explained it all, how to do it, right?
Yeah, it's whatever, weird. Did you read that first?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, that's weird, that stuff. Actually, instructions on how to have sex in a canoe. And then after they talk about it so much, they only give a 3 out of 5 in the, what do they call it, an erotica scale?
Yeah.
So as I say, you know, like, what are you supposed to do? Do it in white water before you get 5 out of 5?
Well, this is such a, Roy, it's always a delight to talk, and as I told you before we started, it's a beautiful book, and it's made me want to go on a canoe, and so congratulations on this book. Good luck with it.
Thanks, Joe. It's always good talking to you.
The same. The book is called Canoe Country, The Making of Canada. It's from Random House. It's author Roy McGregor. Join me on the line from Ottawa in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.